Okay, welcome to the June 28th, 2023 regular meeting of the Port of Kingston Commission. Comments from those in attendance will be allowed upon recognition of the chair. Please identify yourself by stating your name. If you'd like to be added to the agenda for a future meeting, please contact the port office at least 1 week prior to the regularly scheduled meeting. Please submit your documents and or presentation at the time of your request. So we're going to call this, what we have in front of us is a preliminary agenda that is subject to change. I'm going to call the meeting to order at 6:35.
Yep.
And stand to say the Pledge of Allegiance. The flag
is kind of through that building, right through there. Okay.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, good job.
Okay, do we have a motion to approve the agenda?
I propose we approve the agenda as written.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Is there any public comment at this period?
We have another public comment portion at the end.
At the end of the meeting. Okay, the next thing is the consent agenda. These matters are routine and will be enacted by one motion of the commission with no separate discussion. If discussion is desired, that item may be removed from the consent agenda by a commissioner. So what we have before us is approving the May 23rd, 2023 work session minutes, the May 24th regular meeting minutes, the June 13th work session minutes, June 15th special session meeting minutes, June 20th work session meeting minutes, and to approve the May 2023 warrants in the amount of $143,731.93 and EFT payments of $164,338.46.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda as written.
And I'll second that.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you. Now we have action items. First, approve resolution 2023-06-2801, a resolution directing the executive director to amend the 2023 agreement with Wenslow Architects. Greg, do you want to?
Yeah, so staff's requesting additional funding to complete the necessary due diligence for the commercial development and restroom project, both those projects. So Wenslow was submitted for a pre-application meeting with the county, and we need to complete the 20% package for marketing and development. The contract would just be increased by $15,000 to exceed the amount, and staff recommends amending this contract.
Is there a motion to approve this item?
I so move that we approve resolution 2023-06-28-01, directing executive director to amend 2023 agreement with Wenslow Architects.
Is there a second?
Uh-oh.
Laura?
There, Laura.
Second. Sorry.
Any further discussion?
No.
Any questions for Greg? Okay.
Well. No.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. The motion passes. Our next action item is to approve resolution 2023-06-2802. A resolution to approve the 2023 agreement with Olympic Education Service
District.
Yeah, district. Thank you.
Yeah.
Greg, you want to?
So staff is requesting renewal of the contract with Olympic Educational Service District, OESD number 114. The contract will be increased by just under $1,400 for a total of $29,291. OESD has been performing the IT responsibilities. Now this will be the fourth contract with them. And as you know, they cover school districts around the Olympic Peninsula. And so we've contracted with them as well. And for that, we get 1 day a week, as well as we get some additional services as needed for emergency. And or if we have any cybersecurity attacks or anything like that. So they basically responded. So for example, we did have an instance recently where PSE took the power up and down quite a number of times really quickly. And it still impacted the router and fried it. So they came in the same day and then got us up and running again. So I think their response time has been really good. We also want a continuity in terms of the staff, and so we've been able to have that, so we have people that really know the port, know our equipment. So staff recommends renewing this contract.
Do we have a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion to approve resolution 2023-06-2802, resolution to approve the 2023 agreement with OESD.
Second.
And I'll second that.
Any further discussion? Laura, any further discussion?
No.
Okay. Then all in favor?
Aye.
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 And that takes us to our third action item, resolution number 2023-06-2803, resolution to approve Marina software conversion to MarinaGo. Greg?
So staff is requesting approval to purchase and implement upgraded Marina software from our current software provider, Scribble. The new software is called MarinaGo. Contract calls for one-time purchase and implementation costs of not to exceed $10,000, plus an annual subscription of $15,000. I will hand over the discussion to Audra to explain the rationale behind this improvement. But Scribble is still the software provider. It's just the software is called MarinaGo. But we have one of the very original versions of the current software. And staff went through and did a comprehensive comparison between all the different Marina softwares, between all the different ports. So. And we came to the conclusion actually that this actually is probably the best software. Their current version now, which has been upgraded, is a significant improvement. And I think the staff did a really thorough analysis, but I'll hand it over to Audra to kind of go into some of the talking points.
Okay, thank you. And this team was made up of Rose and Chris and Stacy and myself, and they did most of the legwork, so I wanted to thank them for their efforts. As Greg said, we're using a desktop version now of Scribble, and it's no longer going to be supported. They're phasing it out, and because it's online to get, or because it's a desktop version, it's really hard to get support from Scribble to go in there and fix anything. So any problems are really hard to manage. We did look at four other software providers, and originally we thought for sure it'd be for sure to go with Molo, which is one that a lot of the ports use. However, when we looked at this version, which is used widely on the East Coast and Midwest, the abilities it has and the functionality it has far exceeded the others, and it also has a SQL database, so we can pull and do whatever we want. We won't be limited in any way. And it has, it fully integrates with the fuel dock, so once we purchase the new fuel dispensers, it will allow us to get away from the manual writing of receipts. It also allows us to take meter readings with the tablet and go right into the software, and that's a manual process now. We could send out emails to a specific group, like if Tori's doing maintenance on a specific dock, he could text or email those tenants to give them the ability. It's also a better user experience, so The online reservations are better. We could do ACH capabilities instead of, you know, all being on auto credit card payments for people who would rather have an ACH, which is a where it comes directly out of your account.
Then there's no credit card fee.
Correct.
Right.
Yes. And that's really why. That's one reason.
That's huge.
It's a huge savings because it's 7 cents to do a transaction for ACH. Yeah. We're currently paying a lot. That's what's killing us right now, is the credit card processor. And we could also, the tenants can access a customer portal, so they could just go in for the guest talk and, you know, put in their information, say, yes, we have insurance, all of these things that currently we're trying to track down and do. It's all right there.
Fantastic.
So it'll be much better. And that way the operations staff could focus on, you know, the customer experience and marketing efforts and just be more involved that way. Mm-hmm. It has really robust reporting and dashboards. And again, overall, we're saving money when you do the complete analysis of it because of the credit card fees that we're currently paying.
And then there's also less staff time involved in writing hand receipts, all of that as well.
Yeah, and if you want, you know, we have a full packet with all the details, pros and cons. They did an excellent job of documenting it and meeting with references that use the software because, you know, salesmen are some big say it has all these bells and whistles. And I've been through enough conversions to know that they don't all work the way they say.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're really comfortable with our decisions on these two conversions.
Oh,
so,
great.
Stacey has a full financial analysis.
Yeah.
And shows when we'll break even, when we'll be paying less. So it's all available if you guys want to
see. Great.
Yeah, because when we looked at the business process, we couldn't improve them because we were limited with what we could do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
It should save quite a bit of money over time, and it should make a lot better. You know, it's kind of frustrating because we have a lot of people that have been doing business for many, many years, and the current software is, you know, they have to re-enter everything every time. Mm-hmm. It just isn't capturing a lot of that. And just the customer transaction, rather than they having to rely on people or somebody being there, it's like it's already in the system and they can go do things that are much more automated, so we can spend time on really providing value to the end. But it does save a lot of money. One of the things, when the interest rates are really low, some of these fees, it wasn't quite a big deal. People weren't paying as much in the fees, right? Now that the interest rates have gone up, then the fees go up substantially, plus they're on variable fees, so just like your credit card. So when you get all those transactions, so really it should be ultimately that could be savings that are passed through to the customer. So it's been a sense of frustration, but now it really came to a head when the interest rates changed, because we're getting just soaked on these fees.
We're paying the fees and they're getting, you know, the value.
And some are and it they did a restructure of their fees. So I'm calling and saying, "What's this fee? What's this fee?" You know, and it's like, "Oh, we changed that in November." And so they just gouge you know. So the company that MarinaGo works with, they will be saving a lot with that, and they don't have all of the additional fees that the part processor has. So really good, and I thought it was great that operations was included in this. A lot of times you'll have a conversion and one area will say, "Oh, this is going to work," and just throw it down your throat. Well, you know, we looked at it from all angles, and that's really important for this transition.
Is this the one that Port of Bremerton uses as well? No, they use a different one.
Mm-hmm. No, so there was quite a few of the marinas. So what happened was, so there's... there was kind of different standards in the industry, and then one of the software companies, the owner actually died. Mm-hmm. And then what happened, that split into two different software companies, but they're very small, right? So then one of them didn't really evolve their software, and they basically were collecting your licensing fee.
Oh.
So if you already were subscribing to them, they got that steady cash flow, and they moved to Hawaii and didn't really upgrade that software.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other company, they went and they started improving it, and they came up, but it's really it's just really difficult because you also have to have a full-time IT person that's really sophisticated to be able to use that software.
Mm-hmm.
And the software has to also integrate with your accounting software, which we're going to get to next. They have to go hand in hand. So some of the software, it's just not compatible with some of the accounting software that we would entertain. So for like the really large organizations, they might use a very sophisticated Sage is pretty sophisticated, but they would use PeopleSoft or some other accounting software, mm-hmm. and that's just not compatible with, so they only have the choice for some of these choices.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and they promise a lot, and I know a lot of them, they went to Molo, and then they found, like, oh, wow, it doesn't, you know, can't really handle the fuel dock information very effectively, or mm-hmm. they all have their pluses and minuses, but it was pretty clear, I think, when the staff went through it, and they went through a pretty rigorous analysis. Awesome. It's like, this is kind of a no-brainer that this, and I would be surprised if actually these other ports don't migrate over to this.
Right, yeah.
At least the accounting software stage, yeah, for sure. Because they were asking me about it at the WPPA meeting. We had the finance administration.
Yeah.
And I was asking all of them, you know, about how they liked. So a lot of them are using Sage, but it's not intact. Intact is the cloud version, mm-hmm. and what they will be pushing all of their current Sage users to eventually. They, you know, Sage has been around forever. It's tried and true, and it's really robust. So we're excited.
We have Docwa, which is really a middleman that you pay fees into,
yeah.
and they're actually not necessarily providing a whole lot of value to the customer. In fact, a number of boating customers are kind of frustrated. They go, why, when I can just call the guest up, why can't you just book me? So this will have a lot more functionality for people. We will have to go and populate the database with all the customers over time, but at least you will have a real true customer database, which then also will marry up to the accounting software. So going forward, you should have something in perpetuity that, or for many years ahead, that will work much, much better. It's just too bad because all these years, you know, we had Scribble, but it was also not being updated over the years, but so it just wasn't ever really working very well.
That's great.
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
So,
any other questions, Laura?
Asking for approval.
No, I appreciate that you guys are making this move. I know that there were presentations at WPPA about this specific software, too.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Okay, so I think we have a motion on the floor. So no further discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Great.
So that passes resolution 2023-62803. It takes us to the partner resolution 2023-062804 to approve the accounting software conversion that Greg and Audra just referred to Sage Intacct.
Yeah, so staff is requesting approval to purchase, implement, and upgraded accounting software. The new software is called Sage Intacct. The contract calls for one-time purchase and implementation costs of not to exceed $20,000. And the annual subscription cost is, I misquoted it here, is $9,000. Mm. I apologize, not 30. I actually added 9, and so I have kind of a not to exceed amount, so my math is faulty. I apologize. This software works in conjunction with the Marina software, so we are purchasing both at the same time. Makes more sense for us to be able to roll out both of these. You know, we have a backup server so that we have redundancy, so we should be able to migrate everything over, buy both the softwares, migrate all the data over, actually then, you know, test it and back test it, and make sure that they're operating. We have a robust system before we bring it online.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think our hope was to bring it to get this up and running, I think, by the end of the first quarter, or was it the middle of next year?
Yes. So the conversion for accounting happens first, and the person we're working with is very familiar with QuickBooks. We have QuickBooks Desktop, and it's very clunky, and you know, any of the reports that we are doing now have to go into Excel and do XLOOKUPs, and you know, it just takes a lot of time that we could be spending on other things. So, you know, and for business continuity and those things, let's set it up and do it right. And we wanted to do it now because we wouldn't want to go through a conversion with this software, and then it just wouldn't work. So anyway, that's what got us doing it. So we'll be starting this conversion, if approved, actually in July. Mm-hmm. And
July of this year? Or?
Yes, July of this year, but because we have to have the accounting set up first, and then once we have a maintenance file, and it's going to be a transactional interface. So it's not just totals coming over. It's all of the data coming over. So we could run reports on ArenaGo and Sage both for occupancy and different things, KPIs and things that we want to track. So this will start in July. Once we have that built, then ArenaGo will start in October, and they'll build the interface because it has AI, so they could, you know, work on that once we have it built. We'll do all the testing, make sure everything's working, and we're hoping to have it completed before peak season starts next year, so sometime in April, probably before, but we're giving ourselves some room because you know how the conversions can be. So. Again, this is like the GAAP standards, best practices, better controls, you name it. It's a great system.
So. It should help too then, so next year, so when we get into the next SAO audit, then this will be completely migrated, and so then all that data will be ready. So, you know, the SAO audit cost us like $45,000 or something like that. It was over $40,000,
I think. Yeah, because they did 3 years.
3 years, yeah. So that should actually, I mean, I think it should reduce the cost from the audit too, because they should be able to have access to information.
Yeah, and we did choose to migrate over 2022. January forward, so that it would have the full audit year in one system rather than trying to go back and forth. And it also will allow us to like route things through accounts payable, which I'm used to, you know, like invoices and stuff, instead of getting them lost and having copies everywhere, and you know, like in the 21st century.
Kind of run the BARS system that
yes,
the state...
Yes, exactly. It'll be set up for BARS, which we have QuickBooks set up that way now.
Yeah.
It's just, I can't even tell you how much a difference it
And most of the software, this desktop, is all migrating to online. So they're basically all, they're all telling us, you know, we're going to sunset the current software. It's not going to be supported. So it's just a matter of, okay, well, let's just migrate. Let's just embrace it. And then let's really make a conscious decision rather than waiting and then all of a sudden a pinch.
So, fantastic.
Yeah.
But this wasn't, we were talking about doing this, but then we decided, okay, we went through the audit really successfully, and we said, okay, talk to all the staff, okay, we have the bandwidth, we could implement this, and we'd rather get it done, so we can actually get it done, move forward on it, because it's not if, it's when, but I think the decision was, okay, let's accelerate this. So, because it just really, there were so many things that we do that take up so much time, that are so inefficient, just administratively rather than really focusing on the business and also on the customer. I think it's going to be a big improvement.
Great.
Can you summarize the cost differential between this partnership between ArenaGo and Sage with what we're doing now?
Cost-wise, I'd have to refer to the analysis that we did, because that's really holistically looking at it.
Yeah.
You know, all the expenses and soft benefits. So I can send that to you and we can talk about it in a work session. Yes, absolutely.
Great. Yeah. Any other questions about this?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
Need a motion.
Yeah,
to...
I'll propose a motion to approve Resolution 2023-06-28-04, resolution to approve accounting software conversion to Sage Intacct.
I second that.
Great.
Thank
Any
you.
Other discussion?
No.
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. That takes care of our four action items for this meeting. And we have one major discussion item, which is the sports complex sponsored by Rotary. And it all looked new to you two, so why don't you kind of summarize?
Yeah, well, it really was very interesting. I felt it was a bit of a dog and pony show. There wasn't a lot of detail, but you know, I think that the thing that I got out of it was that this is just the very, very beginning of baby steps of this potential project. You know, that Rotary really wants to be the lead on, you know. And so the concept, though, generally, I'll explain the location that was proposed is on lands owned by Rayonier, which is a development company. Radiant is the wing of the development company, Radiant. And the location is on the, will it be the west side of the intersection of Stottlemyer, between Stottlemyer and Gamble Road, in that area that had been logged probably about 4 years ago now, something like that. And so it's, you know, sloping property. As you go further back into the property, it raises up quite significantly, but there is lands that are rolling topography, let's put it that way. And it seemed to me that they were saying the things that for sure were going to be needed, including, you know, access off of the state highway. It's a state highway 305, 307, that's their bond road. And so they talked about what state DOT typically requires in a setting like this, which would be a roundabout. So it would be, you know, a rotary, they call them rotaries as well, but, and tying it into existing roads and infrastructure that's there now. So that was essentially what was presented. There's no presentation in relation to specifics of what was going to be on the ground, but that they did discuss that this is a major transmission of the String of Pearls trail system, the Central Sound to Olympics trail system. And so, you know, this trail system is going to, you know, the county has planned, you know, the upper portion of Port Gamble Heritage Forest Heritage Park, and you know, so you know, it seemed to be that, you know, maybe there's a possibility of doing kind of a like a central hub sort of thing or something, you know. But to speculate on that for sure, but it seemed interesting. I'll tell you what. You know, ports do economic development. This is outside of our port boundary. So, you know, but it will be an economic benefit, you know, for the port district, you know, for sure, for our, you know, for our ratepayers. And so, you know, it seemed to be, again, with it just being the first beginning concept,
it will take time.
So that's just my, in a nutshell, you know, thing. And then the other component was they talked about a partnership with the YMCA, right? Yeah.
YMCA.
I was going to do the one. I really wanted to do that in the meeting.
Yeah, that's cool.
So they talk but they talk very generally, and you know.
Because at this point,
it's just the beginnings.
But we do need something.
Yeah.
We used to have one up off of Finn Hill in Paulsbo. Like it was an indoor soccer, and then it had a baseball and that kind of stuff, but they closed down, and it was cool when my kids were young, because my son played baseball, but yeah, they couldn't keep it going, so.
Craig, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Well, I had just a simple summary, just in case people didn't attend the meeting or weren't really very familiar with the concept. It's so John Rose Radiant, a subsidiary of Rainier, gave a presentation last night at the Paulsbo High School. He was accompanied in this effort by Clint Boxman of the Rotary, Kingston Rotary, along with other Rotarians, and the YMC representatives, including their CEO. The project is being branded as North Kitsap United. And they have a website, it's called North Kitsap United, which should give you some of the information. The basic concept is to develop a 440-acre tract of property owned by Rainier, and they would set aside 20 to 40 acres of that property for a multi-generational sports complex that would serve the many surrounding communities, including Balsall, Hansville, Kingston, Indianola, Bainbridge Island, but they didn't say that, and Port Gamble. It would also serve to attract and host sports events such as soccer tournaments, regional tournaments for all high schools in North Kitsap, and special events such as Hoop Fest potentially. This facility would promote economic development and bring substantial tourism to Kingston and the surrounding communities across the state and from the whole region. The response from the audience, which numbered in the hundreds, was almost unanimously supportive and very positive. But Rainier does have an idea that they have is 440 acres, which they want rezoned by the county.
Yeah, they did say that.
To a, yep. A from resident.
5 to 1. It was 1 in 20, which is rural wooded zoned.
Rural wooded
zoned. To
right.
1 in 5, which is rural residential.
And right. Then they would take the homes and cluster them. So the 5 acres, they might be 5 acres, and then there would be a cluster of homes. And that would allow for green space, which would also accommodate the string pearls concept that Mary Drew's familiar with and everybody. So they have talked about the trails, and they're saying, look, this is all the different benefits. But they said, where are you going to be able to site the sports complex in Kingston? Highly unlikely that there is suitable property. You're going to have to do multiple properties that are smaller. So that would be the other alternative that, that Rotary, I think, is looking at. But still very difficult. And if you looked at, he did show what I thought was very good was a geospatial analysis and a travel cost of how many miles, and it's almost exactly in the epicenter of all those communities in North Kitsap. Mm-hmm. So,
6.5 miles.
Unless you live in
the
Hansville.
Outliers.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Poor Hansville.
But still, like, you know, for me, it's almost equidistant for me to go to Paulsbo as it is to come to Kingston. So, you know, but that location, and you have to have a real sizable facility to attract major tournaments. And then they have to go and they have to play, you know, spend money place. I mean, I did it with my kids, and I wasn't an organized sports in a big way growing up, but yeah. I spent a lot of money going to all these places, and it's very difficult. Where are you going to host them? I used to commute to Silverdale every day for my kid to be on to play soccer and to have facilities. So, They basically laid out the challenge about not having facilities for the kids. And so that was, I think, the frustration a little bit that prompted Clint as a Rotarian, and then the Rotary seems to be fully behind it. But those are the three entities, though. It's Rainier in the form of Radiance Development Company, Kingston Rotary. But they're reaching out and looking for other partners, including Paulsbo.
Yeah.
That's it.
So there's a couple of things I'd like to add. Issue for Rainier at this point is basically, are we going to pursue this or not? Are we going to spend the more than $100,000, more than $200,000 to do all of the site work and evaluation that would need to happen for them to take a step forward? And so they wanted to take the temperature of the community about their support for this. And I think my rough estimate was that about 15% of the people in the room, when he said, if you don't like this idea, raise your hand and on the count of three say no. And about 15% of the people did. And when he did the same thing for the people who liked it, and you know, blah, it was like the rest of everybody. It was quite overwhelming and you know, quite strong. And which I suspect will result in Rainier taking the next step to start all of the analysis that they need to do. And also to start actually working with their partners to figure out who's doing what. And the other thing that I think is really worth noting is that Rotary has been working on this project, trying to find a site, trying to figure it out, for about 20 years. It's been coming up over and over again. They've been actively working on it for about 4 or 5. And they looked at a lot of different sites that were within the urban growth area and just couldn't find anything that was appropriate, that wasn't encumbered in some major way. So I think we're at a point now where it's off we go, and in July, there'll be another meeting where more specifics will be presented. It'll be completely question and answers, because I think one of the things that I was aware of last night, although there weren't a lot of questions, I mean, a lot of answers that I would have liked to have seen, because they don't exist yet, that Rainier is being very open and transparent about what they're trying to do. So I think that we'll all have a good understanding, and not wake up one day and go, oh my goodness, did I agree to that? You know, and yeah, so I think everyone from Rotary went away very buoyed by, which is a very good nautical term.
Yes, buoyed.
By the reaction of the audience and the questions that were asked, the comments that were made at the end, and that sort of thing. And more will follow.
Did anybody discuss the any concerns with Bond Road getting backed up there with the...
Nothing
about
backups.
They didn't get into like all the traffic. They said, look, we have to do all these studies. We don't have answers to all these things.
Yeah.
We just want to know, generally, are people going to be supportive or not? Because if you're not, we can go home.
Yeah.
They didn't really give an opportunity for questions because they haven't done any research.
Yeah.
They were truly just trying to take the temperature.
Yeah. Yes. Because I know the Port of Bremerton, they're struggling a bit with their... racetrack doing out by the Bremerton Airport off, off of Belfair Highway, and it's, you know, that's just two lanes as well, and it's traveled a lot, and people have a lot of concern with their racetrack and all of this.
Dealing with the whole issue with NASCAR and everything else for what, 3 decades?
Oh, yeah. something like that.
To do a major project that is disruptive of existing patterns always elicits a certain level of rejection.
Yeah.
But the question is the level of rejection so strong that it's just not worth doing?
Right.
And I, as I say, I think that was what was sort of set to rest.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, we're going to do the financial report next, and but I'm wondering if it might make more sense if you have public comment that's related to that project. Maybe we should take that a step early and then do the financial report.
I was mostly interested in like the core.
Could you say your name?
I'm sorry, I'm Tammy Bellin. I'm the owner of CB's Nuts. I'm on Sale Case and Cove Board and the Boosters Board. And so all of these things sort of come together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm really curious about what the port's plans are for the future. And I was also just looking at Port Orchard's. They got funding from the Kitsap.
Facilities,
for their waterfront development.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Wondering if Port of Kingston has ever like tapped that idea. And also if there's any opportunity to grow on the north side of the ferry in the Saltaire lot and like on that side for a community access to the water for the kids to be able to sail from. On that side, maybe a floating dock. So I look at the plans and I was like, well, I look at what the port owns and it looks like we own that land, but I also know it's shellfishing land. I'm not sure how it's protected.
Shellfish, and there's eelgrass there as well. So,
citing
a dock there.
It would be a floating dock, but I was thinking more of like natural pavilion. Mm-hmm. For beach access for people to paddleboard off of, so there's actually a little like ramp for smaller boats. But I don't know. I'm just like first time. Just like thinking about these things.
Yeah. And they're all wonderful imaginations and questions and ideas. So.
And I'm really interested in economic development because Kingston, we're on the brink of it. We need these things, and so as they change the traffic coming off the boat. It might be a good time to put a roundabout there so there's access to this other beautiful part of our cove that people can't really access for recreation.
Thank you. I'm sure we'll pick this up again.
Okay.
Actually, we do periodically talk about North Beach and what is possible. So
cool.
We'll make sure that you're aware of that conversation.
And have you gone to the public meetings on the economic development?
Little bit, yeah. I mean, I'm concerned about the comprehensive plan being a Hans Villager and, like, you know, how it's going to affect us, a business owner here in town. Like, mm-hmm. I think that we have huge opportunity if it's done right. And so, and I'm a creative, so I'm like,
yeah, and I love CD's nuts, too. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and your peanut butter is awesome.
So, did you have comments about the event center?
No.
Okay, then we'll go ahead and thank you and go into the finance report.
Yeah. Well, I'm Beverly Parsons and I'm from Mansfield. I came really because I wanted to see what kind of conversation we were having about the meeting last night. And there are just a couple of things that I was wondering about is really whose voice was represented last night. And I keep coming back to some of the issues in the comprehensive plan about how we build up the urban growth areas to ensure that people have affordable living, not just housing, but actually can live and work and so forth in their, in one location, especially people who are in the low to median income. And so I was trying to kind of put this in place there and wondered if any of the people who represent that economic level had their voice represented. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering who would be actually doing a needs assessment that would represent the full scope of people that are really in our county or in North Kitsap. Mm-hmm. And so how is that going to work out? Another issue I wondered about was just how the issue of the relationship with what the tribes are looking at. Like, the tribes have specifically say they don't want that land rezoned. And so, I think of you as a governmental agency, mm-hmm, and sure. How are you working with other governmental agents like the sovereign nations to ensure that the government as a whole in the county, are considering the whole county and the diversity of our county and the economic level of all the people who are involved. I think another thing that strikes me is, following business trends and what's going on, there's much more, with all the internet and everything, there's much more attention to distributed living and distributed transportation.
That's a good description.
So, it's sort of like, are we talking about a centralized group? Maybe that was appropriate 20 years ago, but is that what we need today? And how does that relate to our transportation systems? And as we move into transportation that is more, trying to use non-motorized transportation, looking at the internet and how that works, I just there's a bunch of economic issues, and knowing that you folks are, supporting the economic patterns of Kingston, I just am interested in those conversations that are moving the economic strategies to something that is more in keeping with the direction we're going, mm-hmm, rather than what's been working in the past. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, things are shifting and changing, definitely, in our world,
There's a group that you might want to be aware of here in Kingston. It's called the Affordable Housing Work Group. And they're very intensively reviewing possibilities for Kingston area. And after the meeting, I'll give you the phone number of somebody to call to make sure you get on the mailing list and know what's going on.
Yeah. I also support that concept of affordability and that type of thing, too. I know in the comp plan update, they're really looking at that, very with a very fine-tooth comb to understand, housing and that type of thing. One thing that was interesting last night as well that was also brought home is that the YMCA also does a lot of support in relation to, you know, having scholarships and things like that for folks that are of a lower income bracket and things like that. Sail Kingston Cove as well, as Tammy knows, does a lot of scholarships for that level as well. And the port, we really support that group a lot because we, you know, they're housed, you know, at the Port of Kingston too. And the idea of having additional recreation and things like that, we're definitely looking at that. If you look at our comprehensive plan that the port does, we do that every year. Time and time again, you know, our focus is that we want opportunities for folks to be able to use resources here, be able to enjoy the water. That water enjoyment is, you know, key to marinas and ports, and it's part of economic development too, because people come and then they'll want to grab a bite or something. So then a restaurant is supported, or, you know, what have you. So, yeah. Thank you.
I know the whole there was quite a conversation in the Rotary leadership team about whether or not the money is better spent putting, building more of all these different fields all over the place, and expanding what people currently have. And there was conversations with the coaches and the heads of various, like, parent sports groups, and they all said no, because you're traveling to too many different places, and the interscheduling, having a single facility allows people to get to know the facility, to schedule it in a way that works for all the different opposing groups and activities. So I think there's a lot of thought. I've been very impressed with how thoughtful the group is.
And on the parcel up there, one of the things that people were talking about today on social media was that YMCA is their own business, mm-hmm. and it is not affordable for a lot of people, even though they do get scholarships.
Yeah.
It's pretty expensive, mm-hmm. unless you use it all the time. Mm-hmm. But also, how is that going to help with, like, Kingston High School football, who doesn't have a home field? You know, so we're at, and to your point, we're at odds of, like, how do we serve everyone?
Well, I think one of the other things that's being pretty carefully thought through, and a lot of conversation with Metropolitan Park District, which runs the Village Green Community Center, and the whole Rotary concept, is that how do you not cannibalize? How do you each other's whatever, and make sure that what you're doing is really increasing the range of what's available price-wise as well as functionally. But these are great things to be thinking about, because all of it needs to be thought about before anybody puts a pen to paper saying anything real.
Okay, I just make one more comment about that. When Steve brought up the comprehensive plan, mm-hmm. My understanding from the county, and I don't know if I'm totally correct on this or not, but that the emphasis this time around is on the urban growth areas and how to really make those high quality. And I've been told by some people in the county that attention to the rural areas will be done subsequently. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that, being very concerned about nature and our natural environment and so on, I'm hoping that there will be an opportunity to really look at the rural area collectively of our county, and what the implications would be for that, of something along these lines. Mm-hmm. So it's just one more issue that needs to be taken into account.
Yeah, yeah. We've kind of heard that too, I think, the idea that, and that happened in the last comprehensive plan in 2006 when it was implemented in 2012, I think they called it the year of the rural. And so they looked at rural related developments and that type of thing too. So that component of the comprehensive plan was, they did the same thing, kind of, let's focus on the urban growth areas. This is where we want growth to happen. And then we'll skip it over and do a kind of a subsequent review of the rural areas. And at those times, that's when the critical area ordinance is re-examined, and which is being done this year too. But those things in relation to rural life, they looked at the agricultural code and things like that too. So just things of thought. Yeah. Right. Good, very good.
Okay, so let's turn back to the financial report.
So going over the year-to-date P&L, the income statement, gross operating revenue is $993,000. The first part of the year is really our slow time, so we have seen a net loss over in the past during this time. So Greg is really working to find ways to not only grow revenues in our with our current lines of business, but that's why we talked about how important that economic development is and funding options and all of these things to bring in more revenue. On the same side, on total operating expenses, those were $1.1 million, resulting in a net operating loss of $28,000, and that's before depreciation. So overall, net loss is $81,000 year to date. So we know that we need to grow revenues and cut costs. So, and that's what we're tackling. We're looking at all our contracts. We are making changes that we can in a positive way. Some of them haven't been addressed in some time. So I think there is some cost savings there, and just being very diligent and making sure every dollar spent is a dollar that adds value. And then again, with revenue, and I'm excited to start meeting with, to see what our funding options could be and grants and those things. As far as our balance sheet, our total cash reserves are $2.6 million, with $1.5 million being in our capital projects fund. That's the fund that we started where we're moving money over that's committed to development and economic growth. And we still do have an LTGO bond of $700,000. So the cash position, including debt, is 1.86, which is an increase of $171,000 from the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. And we do have some funds coming to us from DOR, about $178,000. Yeah. Right. So we'll see that. That's from the taxes that we were paying on our fuel that we didn't need to be. So,
right.
Yeah. And we've gone and made those adjustments. So we should get that money soon. So looking forward to that.
That was great being able to find that mistake. And, and then they agreed to rectify and all that.
Oh, yeah. You could go back to 2018.
Yes.
Yeah. We went back to and resubmitted all of the.
Awesome job.
So the idea is, we know when we started off, maybe like 4 years ago, when we started, took a really close look at the reporting on our balance sheet, we knew that we were underwater, right? So that was obvious, and we were losing money. Now we are profitable, and we built over $1.1 million of new after debt. We built $1.1 million of additional profit, which we're going to reinvest and save. I mean, the big thing that we're going to have for a hurdle is the replacing the marina. And when we get to staff reports, it'll probably give you a little more insight as to some of the hurdles we face just trying to do things now, as well, of even just trying to maintain what we have. So I'll give you a little taste in the staff report. But we are moving forward, but I think we have to get a lot, we have a lot more strategies that we're going to have to implement, whether it be going after federal money for appropriations potentially, which is what some of the courts are doing to replace some of these assets, and really working that through. We do have a very, very strong, actually federal legislative body with Cantwell, Murray, Kilmer. I saw Drew Hansen was there the other night,
yep.
Last night. And so I think there's opportunity, and what they're doing is everybody realizes the cost of replacing these is so incredibly high now. It's getting much more difficult from a regulatory and a permitting standpoint. And the environmental mitigation is becoming additive, so it's just ratcheted up. So anyway, I think that we look at this, we say, okay, we know at least now we can maintain what we're doing and continue to grow our cash reserves for reinvestment. Mm-hmm. We've actually spent a lot of money on reinvesting into the existing assets. There was actually too much, probably I'd say deferred maintenance, but we're moving forward on all that. But we do want to improve public access, mm-hmm. and we want to make it more available, and we want to control our costs and make it accessible to in our current customers too, right? So we have to come up with some other ways, and the only way really truly we do need to have all cylinders, we need to get grants. It'd be great if we get appropriation that would really probably cut through the permitting problems that we have if it's at a federal level, because mm-hmm. they built almost all these public marinas like Army Corps of Engineers did.
Yeah.
So if we could get the federal legislation, because Washington is unusually difficult. You don't see the other states and regions having the difficulties we're having. So it would be great if we could do that. And then, we got grants, of course, which is what we're doing.
Do you have a sense of what the horizon is on replacing marina?
It's going to be, so what we're trying to do is every time I think we're really making headway, then we get hit and take two steps backwards. But we're trying to extend the life of the marina as it is to 15 years, ideally, but then you're really getting into a pretty extended life on those assets when you look at them. But
1966, right?
1967, yeah, 66, 67.
Yeah.
And it did go through some renovation between here and there, but that's a 50-year-old asset, but it has got it. But you need actually some more, a pretty significant infusion of capital. It's going to really hit in probably, 10, 12 years if we can extend that out and push it out. But we have a cash flow model that accounts for that. We know we can't grant our way out of it. We're going to have to grow our way out of this. And we can't really push the existing lines of business unless the demand increases, like for parking, for example, as hopefully the fast ferry should increase demand. That would be, and we've seen that happen, right? So the first year we had the fast ferry, extremely successful. We were building lots of revenue. Then COVID hit, crashed that business. We really accelerated and aggressively went after the guest dock to build that business. We've been building that demand because it's really sitting vacant a big part of the time. Mm-hmm. So we've been building that demand. We were very successful there. This last year, I'd say during the winter, we kind of took a step back from the previous year. And we had about maybe half the enrollment for seasonal demand. So we want to, that's a big push this year, get that back up. And that goes towards alleviating pressure on everything.
Yeah.
But we do have to grow our way out, which is part of the reason why we're strategically going after development, commercial development. I mean, we're sitting on real estate assets that aren't generating anything,
right.
And there's a significant carrying cost. But there were some things that we were able to get away with over the years. We didn't have a fire suppression system that we put in, and that's $500,000 hit, probably minimum. We have environmental mitigation. There's one lawsuit, which isn't costing us much more money now, but it did cost us money going forward, or when we look back, I should say. So we'll take care of all these items. There's a lot of problems with working with other agencies. There's a whole generational turnover of staff at all these different agencies. So the DNR, the guy who was around, was really notable, knew what he was doing. He retired, but as he went into retirement, it became harder and harder to get things about the submerged lands, because we have a port management agreement on all the submerged lands. We're trying to actually expand it so we don't have the threat of derelict vessels, which we dealt with,
right.
Thanks to Tori Ray and other people and staff. So we try to, you know, really mitigate any downside risk. But these are kind of tough for everybody. There's a lot of polarizing, you know, mindsets in the world, and COVID's thrown things into threw people off quite a bit. So I think it's working together and then trying to work with the county. You know, really, but even the county, we had some great, great relationships. I thought we were really moving forward, and then some of the key people that we were working with, they moved on, right? So then you got to start over. WDFW, we were working with, we already had approvals with the Army Corps, the WDFW, to put in new floats. That was, to give you an idea, so to your point, you say, hey, let's just put in some floats and do some things. That's what we thought. So we went to put in, replace the Sail Kingston Cove, which we were going to, but we were going to concurrently replace the dock over there at the Hill property, probably just put in some new sections and put that in, and then go over and put in 200 lineal feet of additional capacity to serve, especially during the peak periods in the summer. Then there came out a year ago in July, so almost a year ago, National Fisheries Service came out and said they have a new calculator. And it wasn't really vetted. No one really hardly attended the meeting. So for us to do that, so then what we did was we looked at the docks, which is the docks are actually a big chunk of the cost, big part of it is replace those docks. We want to get better docks out there. So we looked at all the different designs, and then we were going to partner with Friday Harbor. We were actually cut the cost of those docks in half, if not maybe a little bit more. Not the pilings, just the actual floats. And we were able to get it for $100,000. We could replace, do this project for floats. We applied for grants at the state, got a little over $900,000 for grants between the restroom and the floats. So we were cooking with Crisco. We thought we were going to, and we got Army Corps on board. They were like, we don't mess around with marinas, inside marinas. We built the marina. It's already mitigated for, in theory. And then we had WDFW, and they were on board, and they had given us thumbs up. Then we had, then we go in and trying to get it done. They said, you need to consult with NIMS. And then NIMS said, hold on a minute. Because we said, well, why would we consult with NIMS? We haven't really traditionally, that's not been part of the process.
National Marine
Fishery Service. So then that, they said, oh no, we used their calculator, and it meant for the $100,000 of floats, we had to spend $280,000 on mitigation. So that, and that is a real number. And they said, no, you're not confused. So it used to be for like the dredge, when we dredge, we spent spent $750,000, and we had to do, which we weren't actually supposed to be required to, but they did at the time, they mitigated for the dredge to about $100,000 for hold the dredging the marina, right? And that was 10,000 cubic feet. So for us, it's a good sized dredge. It's not a big dredge, actually. So here we owe that $100,000 because they prescribed the mitigation, which failed. It was they prescribed the mitigation, the regulatory agencies, and then it was invasive species of eelgrass, which still couldn't survive. So now they want us to continue to mitigate until something is done. So then we said, well, okay, we're going to work on the stormwater. So we're still going to pursue that. You know, we talked to the county; they're putting in some stormwater mitigation over on Ohio. Mm-hmm. We need to talk to them to see if they would give us, well, it would be nice if they would give us a letter saying that we're going to give you the mitigation credits on it since they can't use it. So it's kind of a freebie. So the $1.2 million that they're going to spend on that, $600,000 of it, I think, was from the Department of Ecology grant. So they got half of it being paid for through the grant from the state. So we said, hey, maybe give us those mitigation credits, then we can use that as mitigation to get all these other projects done, just to get them moving forward, because financially it's really difficult to say we're going to spend $380,000. Like, we won't have to spend it on the Sail Kingston Cove float, but that's about the equivalent of what we're going to put for other moorage. So we'll replace the float for the Sail Kingston Cove, but you know, it's in jeopardy to spend the money for RCO on the float project. So it's very frustrating to me, because this is beyond anything I've experienced, and we have really, really seasoned people that are consultants with us. And I think everybody was just starting to come to grips with it in the port industry, but they, because it's been affecting marine terminals too, and they wanted to mitigate back to, it used to be net gain or loss for the Army Corps, and now it's back to like 1855 standards for NIMS. So that is for mitigation, that's a really big lift. And if you're going to prescribe that, then you better have some way to fund it, rather than just burdening, you know, putting in a regulation saying like small ports, it's just we can't afford that, honestly. So that's kind of just to give you a taste of, you think it's simple to get a little, you know, we thought we were doing the good thing and getting it, we're going to just knock it out. And it hasn't worked out quite that way, but we will, you know, we're committed, the commission committed in a capital program to replace the sailings with GoFloat. Because it's already existing, the mitigation isn't quite the same as if we just try to put in temporary floats. We're just trying to put temporary floats to expand the capacity for the peak season, peak boating season, when we make a lot of money that actually for the port. So that's just going to be a chase. Yeah.
That's what we all deal with all the time. Before we go further, could you take a piece of paper, Chris, and pass it around so we can get the names, because there's an assignment sheet.
There's an assignment sheet right there.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you want to try?
I have my list here, but yeah, this is for the...
Great, thank you. And Tammy's on it, and so on and so forth. Okay, thank you. Okay. Did you have any other public comment?
Yeah, are you guys done with your financial stuff?
Okay. Thank you.
So my name's Greg Wright. We moved here in 1972. My dad was the first Chamber of Commerce president. I've been involved with everything. Scouting. I did the fireworks for the town for a number of years and handed it over to my brother-in-law's brother. We're all connected here. Right? Me, my wife, my brother's sister. So Pete Moore is my brother-in-law's brother. Oh. And then thank you for being on the board of the Booster Club, because I created the Booster Club.
Thank you. That was
quite a lift. We raised $180,000 in 18 months for the school. So that was a big deal.
That's huge.
So I was around for the first go at a hotel.
Oh, okay.
Sat in all those meetings. I apologize, I haven't been to any meetings. I that will change as I retired last week.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations, awesome.
I started coming to stuff. Most of the time I was out of town. But I did have some questions and concerns. A decade ago, we bought some property across the street over here, next to the Hill property, and paid $740,000 for those two parcels. And then the Hill property was paid $725,000. So the port spent $1.5 million on property that has virtually yielded zero. We spent a bunch of money to log it and fence it, which it hasn't been in use by the community at all that I know of. I don't think there's a sign that prevents it, but the access is sure prohibited. I mean, when you go by that, you wouldn't say, oh, welcome to this property. I would never go down there because it just doesn't look like it's something that anyone can use. So when I look at revenue, and revenue is a big thing for me, and Greg and I have talked a lot about revenue, about costs of having a slip down here. When I wanted to get on this on the list to get a slip, oh my gosh, it was so many years. And I thought, well, why is that? Why are people coming all the way from Seattle to put their boat in Kingston? Well, we're cheapest. And that makes sense. So as the rates went up, the cruddy boats have left. We got a pretty nice group of boats in there now. And I think that we're headed the right direction, although we got to start to plateau those rates, because now it's starting to affect me. And others are going, whoa, you know, maybe I can't afford $1,000 a month, $1,300 a month in the wintertime. Power, that's going to drive people out of boating, which will affect you. We talked about gas prices last summer. I said, you look down on your dock down there, it's half empty. Why is that? Because people from South Sound, I'm a boater. Mary, you've been a boater most of your life, right? People that go from South Sound to the islands, they stop in Kingston. Why? To fuel up. Right now they're stopping at Paulsville. They're 25 cents a gallon less than we are. we lose out, the town loses out. I don't know how your fuel thing is. I owned the gas station here when I was 17, the filling station. Mm-hmm. We got our fuel from Time Oil down at Bremerton. Mm-hmm. That's been a long time ago, so I'm not aware of that. But that's something that drives people here for this port, right? I know that when I'm going to put on 100 gallons of diesel, I look at where I can do it the cheapest, because mm-hmm. everything's more expensive. So the first topic was the Hill property, and thank you for cleaning it up. Mm-hmm. I think you all got my letter. Mm-hmm. I'm really proud of what you guys have done at this port. I'm really proud of what Pete was involved with at this port. It's the hallmark of our town, literally. I mean, it's the only thing that we have other than this and our schools. Mm-hmm. That's it. People come here for that, the Christmas lights and all. It's just beautiful. But that Hill property has been a bother for me because the revenue, what are you making a month on that rent?
About $2,000 a month.
$2,000 a month. What do you think an apartment goes for up in town here?
More.
Why is rent so cheap?
We can kick her out and move out and get a different tenant in there, but we are going to have to do some improvements to the house.
And that should have been done 10 years ago.
But you had 3 years where you couldn't evict anybody or do anything with
the
tenant.
I get it. But, you know, when I was down working on my boat the other day, and I look over there and I see those blackberries growing up over the top of the front of that building, mm-hmm. I thought Dick Hill would be rolling in his grave at the condition of that property. Mm-hmm. And it is absolutely not up to the standard of this board. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah, and thank you for cutting down the brambles. I think I attributed the name Slumlord to you guys, and I meant that not in a good way. We're better than that. Okay, that is a waterfront property, probably one of the finest waterfront properties in this town, and it looked like hell. And $2,000 a month? Are you kidding? You could VRBO that thing for $2,000 a week. Right? So that's just bad management of that property. The two adjacent properties, we're sitting on almost $1 million of assets that's yielding zero. Now, I understand that we talked about permit process. That's your way, bailiwick, right? I mean, you're all about permits?
Not here, not at this setting.
Well, I understand that, yeah. But that's mm-hmm. what you do?
Sure. It's more complex than that. Those properties are zoned as, you know, for residential use.
We
have an application in to change that.
I get it.
But the county would not let us do that until this year with the comprehensive
right.
plan update. So that we had asked when I first came on in 2018, can't we get an amendment, if you will, to take a look at that with the comprehensive plan, the items, to do a site-specific amendment.
Right.
To change that to a similar zoning that we have in place.
Right.
So I think we've been pretty successful with zoning changes. You know, we had neighborhood commercial as the zone for the port itself.
Right.
That we were able to get a variance to change that to the urban village center zoning, which was adjacent and made sense, but that the Hill and Toth properties, they were not going to consider it until the comprehensive plan. So we have that in place.
What is the zoning on the Hill property?
It's all residential and actually the
urban low.
Oh, yes.
Five to nine units per acre.
Okay.
And the parking lot for all the truck and trailer parking is all residential too. And so there's like 150-foot setback to be able to do anything. And you take the 150-foot out, it's basically you're getting into such a small footprint that then they just said basically flat no, anything for rezoning residential to commercial, which is what we have in, which they have accepted. It looks like it's in all of the alternatives for the new comprehensive zoning. But they said basically we won't do it until 2024 when we actually make a determination through and accept the comprehensive plan.
So we're sort of stuck with not being able to, you know, maximize that for what we would think would be a great place for some kind of commercial development, whether or not, you know, we could do rental cottages or, you know, whatever. It's a commercial-based development that we would seek.
You know? How are we getting away with renting out the Hill House? It's a non-commercial property, residential, and it, under that same thinking, you could take the other properties and build houses on them and rent those out.
That's right.
Correct.
Well, then, but if you're building houses, you're building houses, and
but they'd be a rental income. I mean, a lot of money could be made.
I'm just seeing
it gets complex.
We keep talking about lack of funds, and then I look at the budget and I see $4.5 million for the property in behind for what's going to be a new hotel. And I look at that and I go, well, what benefit of that is to Kingston? Well, we're going to get some increase in business, right? People are going to come and stay because we're not a destination. So I'm all for that.
Yeah.
My question is, shouldn't we, you know, if we're going to improve something, shouldn't we improve something we already have? Something that's been sitting $2,000 a month? I mean, that's nothing.
But I think what, maybe I'm getting this wrong, but if we can get it rezoned as a commercial, urban commercial, it would be more of a revenue generation than building a house.
Correct.
So but I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
Saying is I've read through all your reports, all your projects, all your everything, and there's not one mention of those properties in any future development.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would seem to me that that would be a major part. I mean, we went down this hotel property 2 decades ago, at least 2 decades over that, and it got shot down by the community. How are we going to fund it? $4.5 million. I was worried about you spending $20,000 on your computer upgrades, because you're what, 82,000 in the hole right now. But and I'm going, you want to spend $20,000 on computers, but now you want to spend $4.5 million on a hotel, and you've got a rotting house that yields $2,000 a month, $24,000 a year, doesn't even pay for your computer upgrades. So where are we going?
So first of all, they acquired those properties partly because the cash reserves were not giving us any return to the county.
I'm not saying it was a bad idea.
But I mean, I understand the idea, but the idea was that they acquired those properties because it's going to appreciate faster than what our cash reserves are paying out. Then the cash reserves got spent down. Okay, so concurrently, that property is appreciating and double digit every year. So we could surplus it if the county, if the
commission wanted. Why would we want to do that, though?
I'm not saying that we do. I'm just saying I'm trying to lay out options, which we did talk about within the board meetings repeatedly when we went over the planning before we undertook the actual architectural effort to go into the design effort and engineering effort for the tent pad area, kind of the restaurant area. So we looked at trying to develop those properties. We went to the county, tried to get that accelerated, and they just basically gave us a flat no. And so we said, okay, we just have to bide our time, which forced the priority over to the tent pad. So could we get more rent out of it? We would have to invest in that asset. If you looked at the asset, you know, these are all in liquefaction areas. They don't have great foundations necessarily. So, you know, if all these things come in, you have to undertake it, and then you have to potentially evict the tenant to be able to undergo these improvements to be able to bring it into a marketable condition to get that kind of rent. For that house specifically.
As I saw, you have budgeted money for the dock and for the foundation roof, right?
We tried to do the dock.
For 2024.
We couldn't get Thompson Piling or anybody to come in to pound the piling in. They refused. So we tried to just do a quick emergency repair on that dock as an example. So we said, okay, we'll go in and we're going to. So then how do we get that into a. What kind of use do we want to get out of that dock to make it available to the public? So we are moving in that direction, but basically it's very difficult when you're in a, as a landlord, and if you actually looked at the legislation session this time, or what they started to put and redefine the relation between a landlord and a tenant, they're making it extremely difficult to be a landlord in this state. So there's all these things that you have to do in order to be able to evict a tenant, but for, there was a moratorium on it, so.
Especially a government landlord.
But so it's kind of like you got to the point where why talk about evicting somebody when you have no teeth to what you can do. So, but we knew that we were going to undertake a kind of a, where are we going to do to prioritize this? So we said, okay, let's just focus on developing the potential of the hotel and restaurant, which has been kicked around for another 20 years, but not acted on. So we've done all the due diligence on that to move that forward. You know, we built out.
Got it rezoned.
Yeah, we got the rezone, which was great, which I appreciate the county, because we worked with them, and they were pretty responsible in what they could do, but they, but that property turned out to be, so far, it's been a little bit challenging to do it on a timeline we would like to. Do we, so we went and said, okay, we had a couple trees fall in there, so we said, okay, let's get a permit to cut some of the trees down, or all the trees, they're all really pretty much at risk, and then open it back up. We've been waiting patiently for a permit just to do that.
Almost a year.
Let's do it.
We just need, we need somebody to come out and so look at the tree. And it's three trees.
So that's, so we are trying to open the, you know, those assets up to make it more available to everybody, but you know, there are constraints. So if something does happen, you know, we're not gonna weather a lawsuit.
I think if you,
I'm not interested in
brought the
litigation.
Hill property up to a market value, that person would probably roll on because they couldn't afford it.
Well, first. Yes, agreed.
Second is that you're jumping into a $4.5 million project and you're balking about a $10,000 roof. I mean, we are apples and oranges here. You have an asset that's being widely ignored. Right? I mean, it's been let go to the point that it's a danger to a child out there playing on that dock. And that's a lawsuit ready to happen right now. The piling are falling down. The dock is all laying over on its side. I mean, and that only got that way because of neglect. And it's been the neglect over 20 years of our ownership of it. So, you know, I'd love to jump on board with the hotel idea, but I just can't. Because I'm looking, that here's a property that is just, the port has done an awful job with it. On all the good things you guys have done, that's been awful. And until I said something the other day, I think it'd still be covered with blackberries. I bet you had two guys over there going 24 hours a day for 3 days to get those knocked down.
Well, the tenant stepped up, and it was one guy, and it took him a half a day, Greg, but thank you for your noticing. It did bring it to everybody's attention. The tenant stepped up as soon as she was told, it's time to mow the lawn. She mowed the lawn.
Well,
and then we took care of our side. I know.
That's,
I'm just saying,
that should,
I got
to
correct
it
a little bit. So.
Right?
Well, I mean, we
want to build a hotel, but we can't manage a house. You're telling me we can't manage it because of the state thing. Well, we do it all the time with the, I'm a tenant. You manage me. You raise my rates to the point that people move away, right? Where are our tenant voters? They're leaving because the $250 a month additional they have to pay, right? And you and I both know that you don't want those guys here.
That's
because
right.
They're a fire risk. But there isn't any data to support fire on boats by residents other than heaters, portable heaters used in boats, which we all do in the wintertime.
Well, I would argue that because that's not what the insurers tell us. And so the insurance companies are saying, look, you have DIYers when you have liveaboards, they don't wire things correctly, you get short circuits, and they end up with a fire.
They're also the first one there to report the fire.
Which is true.
So
there's an upside, but there's a downside. And so, you know, what we found was the other problem you have is, again, this landlord-tenant relationship. So what the state did was they interpreted liveaboards as being a tenant. but they're not. They're supposed to be a licensee. All of the mortgage customers are licensees. And we tried to make that clear with them, but they started interpreting it differently, which meant all these other marinas, they started having extreme problems, drug use, you name it. They couldn't evict anybody. They come in and they just park their boat in any empty slip. And we didn't have that problem. And so those are problems that you didn't experience, but you would have experienced it. You would have experienced it at Paul's Boat. You would experience it at Port Orchard and all those other marinas. Bremerton had a heck of a terrible problem.
They had to wait until
the moratorium was finally lifted in September in order to do anything. Then they have to go through this whole process of kicking those people out. So not only have they wrecked some of the assets, now I got to repair all those assets, they've attracted really unwanted crime. And so no one wants to even go in there and vote. And where do they go? And there's a wait list everywhere. So that's, you know, so where do you even relocate to? So I'd say that we're far from perfect, Greg. Points taken, and it's very legitimate. We have tried to take some actions without being super heavy-handed, but we are working that direction.
I have not
and
heard
we agree
with
us. No, no,
now.
But it's they're good okay, points.
And that was my first part. I've been involved in this town since I was a little kid. And I will gladly help you guys as much as I can now that I'm retired.
Great. So, well, those are good
thank
points.
Thank you, guys, for I know it's
thankless
job. I don't know if Laura's still on here.
She's there. Yep.
Yeah, she's there.
She and I went to high school together.
All right.
She's a Hackworth, not a Crossbow.
Well, I think this has been a great conversation. Thank
good.
You.
Thank you.
But Commissioner reports. Laura, do you want to start?
Okay, so I really appreciated the discussion. I could only hear pieces of it because our owl is not working at full capacity. Thanks for coming, Greg, and expressing yourself. I knew you really wanted to, so I appreciate you showing up. I want to, my update is that before I got sick, I did the KCAC numerous meetings and chamber meetings, and I want to thank staff and the commission, my fellow commissioners, for giving me this time to get over this stuff, and I will be back probably next week, but I really want to thank staff and my fellow commissioners and Greg and Audra and Chris and Stacy and all you guys for just jumping in and doing what you need to do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, I can report what Laura was talking about was that we had been involved with the Kingston Community Advisory Council trying to come together with some concepts of what the sub-area plan of Kingston should look like. We created, with Greg's wonderful guidance and Commissioner McClure's excellent expertise and Commissioner Granville as well, really, I think, a very good product in relation to what we'd like to see for the Kingston sub-area plan. And the nuts and bolts of what we came together with was essentially a fairly accurate agreement for the most part with the Kingston Advisory Council. The only difference was that we had suggested that the downtown core remain in a required component of a ground floor retail use, what we call the storefront zone. And so principally the difference between the two plans that had been forwarded to the county for review in an environmental impact statement was the fact that we really felt very strongly about the fact we wanted this downtown core, down Main Street up to Coffee Oasis as a starting and ending point to down to the ferry, to really have to have a retail component and a retail look. And so principally the difference, other than you know, our idea of height increases and things like that, which of course maximizes the amount of space we have to do development in the urban growth area, we felt it was important to also bring that home too. So there were several meetings, you know, had some emotion to it as well, which is fine. And we had got our plan out the Thursday prior to the requirement for it to get in, and got that done and out. So, but I thought the product was great. Greg did a fantastic job. Chris, you did a great job too, and thank you for your help with that. And that's principally what's happened, other than, of course, last night's meeting. So, okay.
Can I ask a quick question?
Uh-huh.
I've heard historically that businesses struggle with appropriate parking in the downtown area. Mm-hmm.
Could you speak a little louder?
Enough parking for, uh-huh, like a restaurant, you need to have,
yeah,
a couple of,
yeah,
handicap spots and
talk to that a little bit. What we had suggested as well is that if someone is going to do a commercial development on the ground floor, the majority of what we want to see as the Kingston community is walkability. So why encumber a tenant, if you will, or commercial user on the ground floor with a requirement to have parking where people should be walking in town and commercing through, just strolling through and having parking on the outer portions instead of blocking up the downtown area. So we want more walkability. And so we proposed with that a concept of the sub-area plan that this center, what we call the storefront zone, should not have to be encumbered with having to have parking as well. So we posited that with it as well.
Yeah. Has the Port ever considered changing some of the big boat parking and up the hill parking to paid parking? I mean, is it paid parking?
It's paid parking. It is paid parking.
No one parks there.
Yeah, it is paid parking there.
Because there's not a machine.
So one of the things that we also proposed is that the county participate, if not pay for, ideally pay for, but participate in a real analysis of the parking needs as they're emerging, taking into account not only what's going on, but the trends that are being seen in use of cars and parking cars and so on and so forth. And my sense is that that's going to be a early action item, because so much depends on it. Mm-hmm. You know, so many important
decisions.
So
accessibility, primarily, is what I think about, is accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
To expand on that a little bit, I went to the county 2 years ago, took 30 months. I was asking them to approve UTVs, which are basically fuel-powered vehicles like the two-person golf cart, mm-hmm, or a four-person. It's happening in cities all over the country, that golf carts, you know, a lot of them, they call them golf cart communities. And it answers the problems that we are discussing here about parking. After 30 months, they shot me down. Mm-hmm. So, good luck with that. They said that they didn't have the enforcement to enforce the UTV idea.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
But the licensing is exactly the same as a EV. Mm-hmm. So
I have a UTV that's fully licensed, blinkers, horns, everything that the EV has. But the law in the state says that the communities like Kingston, Kitsap County, a city, whatever the governance is, must accept the EV, but with no recourse. You must take it. But a fuel powered, the same size, the same everything.
Oh, fuel powered.
You have to adopt a rule that says you will accept it. And when I brought that to their attention, they, after 30 months, shot me out, which I thought was very futuristic.
One thing that I'm really looking forward to in September or August, that there's a regional ferry conference, and the major topic is the evolving commute universe, and that's going to be how we deal with all of that transition, not only for cars but for ferries as well, is pretty much the major focus of it.
Yeah.
So that should be pretty useful. I feel like I should bring you back whatever materials they distribute to us.
I think it's October 7th.
October 7th.
If you don't want to go down that path of the golf cart community, let me know, because I've got reams of data on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, well, that takes us to staff reports.
Tori?
All right. Thanks for coming, everybody. Great conversation. Nice to meet you. Finally meet you. I think we've met in passing before. Yeah. What's that?
You called me before my
kid
was breaking into our boat.
Yeah, right. Well, like I said, nice to finally meet you. Nice to meet you as well. 4th of July is on the hot plate right now. Mm-hmm. Get us to the 5th of July safely, and doing a lot of just clean up and getting everything ready. 4th of July is the hot nail right now. After the 4th of July, we got some time to prepare the boat launch. That's going to take up quite a bit of time, but we got the talent and all the stuff we need. We're just waiting for the 4th of July festivities to get over.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to fix concrete. So that's the name of the game right now. Summertime, dry weather, and we're...
And lower tides, too.
We got a couple record tides coming up in July. So, yeah. The last stretch of -3s were one thing. We got -4s coming up in July. So, yeah. It's a concern. And keep an eye on utilities. And
we're going to load out the fireworks as a result. I was talking to Ray and the fire department. We're just going to load them out of ADOC right to the fireboat because it's too low a tide. They can't come in and load them on the boat ramp. So we'll have to secure the area. You only want about 100 feet. Usually they go 150. I've always had a minimum, but they said it would be okay. The fire inspector said 100 feet, I guess, safety area. So we'll load them on ADOC, which is the first, but I actually think it's probably safer to do that than to go out of the...
Yeah, let them stay at their moorage. They got good water there. And tide will be going out that whole time. So as the boat gets heavy, it won't be an issue with them leaving. So you don't want to load a boat with an outgoing tide, and there you are, stuck till 4 o'clock in the afternoon waiting for the water to come back. And, it sounds like it's all developed into a pretty decent plan, and well thought out. And I think we'll give them quite a bit of room, just where the lines are going to be to barricade the area. They're going to have plenty of room. So,
I think it'll still end up probably closing down the boat ramp during part of the day. But it is, this can't be avoided. So it's just the way that we've done it before, but I try to avoid it just because there's so many people around and trying to secure it, but it's the fire department taking and handling it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the idea of something that goes wrong and affect in a big way, it's a mortar.
It's nice to be there. It means more when the fire truck's parked there than when the forklift is flying away.
Is
there any way they could load off of the commuter boat, the fast ferry boat on
there? with several speed bumps there, the fuel system would have to be either completely covered up, drained, or way too many hurdles to get there. And then just the long walk out.
The distance is pretty big.
There's no way to get anything heavier than like our landscape gator there, out there. So it would just be so labor intensive. We'll use ADOC, right where the fire boat ties up now.
I think it'll move pretty fast. It's actually, it's not too bad a loadout when I watched it. It's not like, though they have, it's going to be a big fireworks show. That's,
yeah, I saw the,
where'd you get the barge?
I don't know where they got the barge at. I think they, I don't know where he got it at. So they, the 4th of July committee, they actually leased it. So I was wondering which freight barge they got, because usually I always got the Foss barge, always for years. And but then the people at Foss, I sold a lot of their assets, so they might even sold that freight barge. But I don't know if they got it on.
I haven't heard.
When I did it, we loaded out of Paulsbo the night before and brought it in that day. That way we avoided all shutting down of any docks or ramps.
Yeah. Well, they
we
used to load
out the day before the night before that.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that's the 4th of July committee, however they want to manage that exactly.
I'm involved with that one.
Yeah.
You have time on your hands. But they used to. We was always loaded out wherever that was an approved fueling facility too, because they had all, we had everything in place. So that's why you used to always load a lot of times out of Port Richard. Same as when we used to go out of in Seattle, a lot of Terminal 91 or Ballard Oil, and even the Warren could even do it if you wanted to. But and then they just have to lock down the facility and just do it really quickly. But you had to quick in and out.
Okay. So, Audra, did you have anything else you wanted to add? I mean, we heard a lot about those, too.
Yeah, just I appreciate the comments. And, you know, like Grego says, if we do well, we can do good. And I think that all of these things are very important. We are looking at our capital assets and need to assess replacement costs and build it into our cash flow model so that we, you know, don't come across any unexpected, you know, surprises. Because I agree with you, we can do some things, you know, a little better, but I'm learning also that there are a lot of walls you come across when you try to do these things. So nothing is easy, but I appreciate it, and that's it.
I think it's really frustrating because it's, if you disregard, and let's say I declare an emergency, and I just go, we're going to do this. The problem is they come back on you now, and they come back with a vengeance. So if you, because they say, like, you still have to mitigate, you still have to follow the rules, you just have to go backwards. So now you've given them potentially, you know, you've just relinquished any control you might have, and then you're at their mercy. So I just think that there's some things where we just have to work together with everybody and try to, you know, have mutually shared interest in these things, I hope, so that it's, but the oversight has really changed dramatically since post-COVID and a lot of people retiring, and it's just it's a very different world.
What tend to incorporate?
We need low-income housing, so we have families
living
there. So they're retiring. Nothing against retiring.
One thing I wanted to add for you guys, the county wants to use our stormwater, right? Through the port.
Mm-hmm.
Make a trade. Hey, we want new bathrooms. Why don't you give us a permit?
They don't talk to each other.
You know what I mean, though?
Yeah,
they
want to
use something of ours.
Yeah, we've been really struggling with that.
No, you can't use it until we get bathroom permits.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We've been really struggling with that.
I fought with them so many times, so I totally understand. The school district was worse after.
Well, with that, I'm going to announce the next regular meeting, which is Wednesday, July 19th at 1 p.m. It will be hybrid. It will be here and by Zoom. And unless there's any other comments, I think we're going to adjourn. And it is 8:08.
I have a question.
Oh, thank you.
What is the status next Tuesday? We're not obviously having a work session, correct?
Correct.
The parade is going to happen, though, I'd bet you.
Yeah.
And my other question is, who, since Ray is going to be otherwise occupied, who's going to be driving?
Audra.
What? I mean driving.
Either I will or we'll get somebody.
You don't want me driving.
Okay.
Ray
is just wanted to put the bug in your ear.
Glad
since Ray's a Grand Marshal.
Grand Marshal.
So, would you entertain a motion to adjourn?
Yes, I would.
I'll second that.
Any further discussion?
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for coming.